Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. Today's Friday, April 3rd. How are you doing, Jen?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. We're both here.
We are. And it's Good Friday.
And it's Good Friday. Friday is always good.
I agree.
But this is an especially good Friday. This is a good Friday.
Yes.
Right?
And it's the first night of Passover.
Yeah. So I have to correct myself. I called it Ash Friday, and that's not true. It's Good Friday. I don't know what Ash Friday is, but it's...
There is nothing Ash Friday. It's Ash Wednesday.
Okay. You should have corrected me the first time.
I didn't hear you say it, or I would have.
Really?
Don't you worry. Yeah, I didn't hear you say that. Did somebody else correct you?
No.
Oh, so how did you remember you said it?
Oh, because I remember just about everything I say.
Oh.
Yeah, believe it or not.
All right.
Remember things I say, except when I don't. And then people remind me.
Awesome.
No, my memory is not very good. But I remember talking about it because then I was reminded it's Good Friday.
Yes.
So, yeah. I was reading the paper, I guess, or something.
You still get the paper?
Yeah. Do you believe it?
No.
Yeah, I get USA Today every day. I used to get the Wall Street Journal, too, but I simply don't have the time to read.
Yeah.
Excuse me, to read both. But... No, I love newspapers, and I will do anything to keep them alive because it's fun. I mean, I know we're from a previous generation, but hey, kill me. You know, I love newspapers. I love the tactile experience. I love the smell. I just grew up with it. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, we get everything from our computers and tablets and phones. So it's a nice break to have, you know, I mean, even with books, I have a Kindle. And I get both Kindle books and regular books.
Yes.
Yeah. You're yawning a lot this morning. Huh?
I know. Well, so I got up early to go to Pilates.
Oh.
And that's
not something you do every day?
No. Not in the morning. I went yesterday morning and today in the morning.
Mm.
And so that's why I'm dressed in gym clothes.
Okay. So that means you get up early.
Yes. And earlier than usual. And then I haven't had coffee yet. I'm going to have it after the show. I didn't have time for coffee.
Oh, really? You don't have coffee with you now?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. I think they brought some coffee here.
Bummer.
Yeah, in the other studio.
Well, that's probably for them.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes they bring a few extras.
Oh.
I don't know. But so you didn't get coffee. Well, I don't blame you for being so tired.
And truthfully, I don't know if coffee even has an effect on me. I think it's more like a placebo effect.
Yeah.
I just love it so much in the morning. It's part of my routine.
Yeah.
So my routine got all messed up today.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay.
Yes.
At least we're not on video, so people can't see you yawning.
No, they can't see me yawning.
Yeah. Yesterday, I was yawning a lot.
I didn't see it because I only see your eyes.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I was thinking about it. So you really don't see my face, right? You only see my eyes. I need to move the computer, you know, because you can't see the expressions on my face.
Yes. Well, yeah. Is the computer necessary?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well.
It is, yeah. But... what can you do, you know? When in the video studio, we put the camera on the side, so it doesn't really...
Right.
So the screen doesn't come into play. But here, yeah, I can totally see that. I often wondered, but yeah, it's about the line of my eyes here.
Yeah.
Maybe we need a smaller monitor, one that we can lie on the table or something. But that's okay. You have plenty of chances to study my eyes then.
Yes.
There you go.
I see them 5 days a week.
Yes. Oh wow! So you're gonna celebrate Passover with your family and then go to church?
No, with my friends.
With your friends?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I know you have family here. So
yes, we on the Jewish holidays for whatever reason all sort of split up.
Uh huh.
Because there's cousins with fiancés that go to their family, and then
right, everybody goes to their families or their spouses. Family.
We do like. Oh, I guess we didn't do Thanksgiving together. We do Christmas, and we do Sundays,
right.
And we'll do Hanukkah. But because we do so many Sundays together in the year, we don't really do the holidays unless it's Christmas.
Okay.
Or birthdays. We'll do birthdays together.
Okay.
So
well, that's good enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Passover should be cool.
I'm lying. We do Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur together.
Oh, really?
We go to temple together and then we do that.
Really? Yeah. So you actually go to temple. Well, you see, you're more Jewish than I am.
Well, one of my cousins gets us tickets. So then if he gets us tickets, we go.
Yeah, but I want tickets to something interesting. My God. I just bought tickets to the Doobie Brothers. Have you heard of them?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. To me, I grew up with them. So to me, it's very exciting. Just like when I went to see Asia. But I know people look at me like, what are you talking about? You know, but hey, need to embrace my age, right? Somehow.
You have a big thing with your age. You bring that up a lot.
I really do.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's a thing that happens in life. Everyone gets older.
It does. But we'll see you at 55.
I'm probably going to be rocking it. I'll probably still be doing my workouts. I'll be, you know, kicking and stretching.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess it depends on what you look for.
I'll be wiser. I'll have more memories behind me. I'll have, like, probably grandkids coming soon.
Right.
You know, I feel like that. Every time is a good time if you look at it like that.
Yeah. No, I mean, these are some of the best years of my life right now. I wouldn't deny that.
Yeah.
But I miss being young. What can I tell you? So, yeah. So I do bring it up. And maybe I need some therapy for that. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. I know. What can you do? You know, you try to fix some things in your life and then other things break. I fixed a lot of things about myself, you know.
That's good.
Over the years. Wisened up a little bit and stuff. But some things, I guess, just come up as you age, you know. So. So that's that. What about so you guys do it with your so you do it with your friends? Are you the one that is the host, or is somebody else the host?
Somebody else is the host, and they've sort of taken over everything. And our Passover looks less like a Passover and more like a dinner. I don't think there's anything Passover related to the dinner we're doing tonight. It's really kind of pointless, really. We're going to maybe do a little bit of a Seder, but, like, we don't have a Seder plate.
No, are you going to eat bread or matzah?
No matzah. I mean, everyone's basically on a diet, so, like, we're not doing matzo ball soup. We're not doing kugel. We're not doing any of the standards that you do for Passover. So it's just a matter of who has the most space, and right now it's not me, so I'm not in charge. But if it were up to me, it would be a lot more.
It would be different, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a shame, but it's fine. It's one year out of all the celebrations, and it will be fine.
Yeah. And besides, it's about getting together and stuff, you know. It's not so much about all the mitzvahs and stuff, you know.
I mean, I get together with these friends all the time, so it's not so much for me that. But
yeah. Yeah, but at least you're not alone. You have people to be with, and that's important. Some people are alone on the holidays, and that's terrible.
Yeah. And then Sunday night, I'm celebrating my cousin's birthday, and all of us are going to the Magic Castle.
Ah, the Magic Castle. There you go.
Yeah.
So you'll have to tell us how it was.
I will.
Because I've always wanted to go. So, and you guys got an invitation, right?
I know a magician.
So you know a magician. And that's what you said. You have to get an invitation from a magician, right? Wow.
When you know a magician, you're in forever, basically.
Right. That's a pretty clever thing to do, though. You create sort of like an exclusive club, you know?
Very.
Yeah.
You can only go if you know someone.
Right. Wow. So. I guess they make their money anyway, so they don't care.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that probably gets full there all the time.
Yeah, right? I'm sure. I mean, the thing was, okay, so my cousin's birthday was yesterday, so we wanted to go either last night, Friday, or Saturday. It was packed. They're like, the next time you can go on a Friday or Saturday is June.
Wow.
We're like, well, his birthday is this week.
Yeah.
So we'll take Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I mean, and listen to this. So we were thinking of bringing a cake in to celebrate because I don't know what they have for dessert. So, I mean, the food's not particularly good there, and it's expensive, but you have to eat when you go. You need a dinner reservation. So they make you do certain things so that it adds up.
Yeah.
And then you drink, and like then you go to the shows, and you're there for like many hours. It's not a quick thing. So they make a lot of money. But so if you want to bring a cake from like the outside world in, it's $5 per slice for them to cut it and plate
really?
It. It's like, it's crazier than a corkage fee. It's like bananas. Yeah. $5 a slice. And I was like, well, there's six of us at $5 a slice. That's $30.
Yeah.
Plus the cake. You have to pay for the cake.
You have to buy the cake.
Right. I'm like, this cake is not worth $60.
Yeah. Sorry. Like $30 just to be able to eat the cake there.
Right.
Yeah, come on. So, you guys can eat it somewhere else. Go outside in the parking lot.
No, we're not getting a cake. We'll eat whatever they have. Yeah. He got a cake yesterday, so.
Oh, okay, good.
And it's a boy. He doesn't really care.
Yeah. Huh?
No.
Oh, well. In a few minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in. An Undertaker.
Yes.
Have you ever spoken to an Undertaker
before?
No,
I have not.
I never have either.
It's probably very interesting.
Yeah, I would say. So that's why he was going to be come on the show. Undertaker, Mortician. I don't know what the difference is. We'll find out from him.
Yeah.
But it does have to do with funerals. So he wrote a book, and we're going to talk to him in a few minutes. Let's see. What else is going on? What did I want to bring up? Something that happened, and of course I don't remember it. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. You probably heard that there was a deal signed with Iran over their nuclear development.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. People, if you haven't heard, you're living under a rock.
Right. Exactly.
It's like the biggest thing happening.
Yeah, because that's very important, you know, because it has to deal with limiting their nuclear capabilities and... you know, but of course, Israel is not okay with this because, you see, when they make deals, they don't really care about where Israel is and all this. The thing is that they're still saying, I mean, you still have people in their government saying that Israel's destruction is not even an option of, or like not doing it is not an option. You know, it's still on the table, destroying Israel. So, you know, and this deal is like, it involves trusting Iran, and I don't see how you can, you know. They're saying, oh, you know, we do not lie. Yeah, right. So, the thing is Iran needed this because they have sanctions on them, you know, so they can't do business with the world.
Yeah.
And it's really choked their economy. So they want some kind of a solution, but they're not willing to give up their development for nuclear weapons.
Well, what they're saying is nuclear energy, not nuclear weapons.
Right. But the thing is that what they have and what they're doing is weapons grade, you know, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
And they have like... I mean, they even have like underground facilities where they know you're not going to be able to get them. So part of the agreement was also, or should have included, you know, you guys giving up that. But you know, it's very complicated, and you know, and we've had problems with that country for many years. And, you know, beginning in the 70s or even before that, where, you see, America used to be on the side of Iran when they had the Shah. Then there was a revolution, so America became the bad guy, and we still are, for as far as Iran is concerned.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they're not going to give up their nuclear weapon program because they consider themselves the biggest power in the Middle East. And they're not going to give it up. So... you know. Anyway, I think this is our guest calling, so let's go ahead and take that. Good morning, you're on the air. Go ahead. Is it Stan?
This is Stan.
Stan, good morning. Thank you for calling in. You called a little early, so I wasn't sure it was you, but here we go. Where are you calling us from this morning, Stan?
Sam, I'm calling you from a town called Newark, New York. We're about maybe 30 miles east of Rochester, New York.
Okay. Isn't Newark considered New Jersey?
Well, there are several Newarks around the country, Sam.
Really? So there's one
Newark,
in New
New
York?
Jersey, but we're Newark, New York is where my wife and I live. So we're just outside of Rochester. So
I see.
I bring you and your partner there, Jen, greetings from the Empire State.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
I just didn't think that two states would have, both of them would have Newark. So now I know. You see, we learned everything every day. And so we're talking to Stan Swan. You contacted me, and you have a book, I guess, that you released. Was it just released?
Yes, Sam. As a matter of fact, my publisher is in Morgan Hill, California. Is that near you, folks?
Not at all. I never even heard of it. So
okay.
I don't know where...
The publisher is called Bookstand Publishing, and they published my book on Friday the 13th of last month. I don't know if that's ominous or not. Hopefully.
Yeah. So
but it's been out now about 4 to 5 weeks, doing very well, and it's called Undertakings of an Undertaker, True Stories of Being Laid to Rest, and it's just about 28 short stories. I started keeping track of making notes of interesting things when I started in this business back in 1978, and over the years, as I met with different families and made arrangements, they said, "Geez, Dan, maybe you ought to write a book," and I said, "Well, it's odd that you should mention that, because I am." So that's how it happened.
Right. Now, Jen and I were wondering, what is the difference between a funeral director, undertaker, and mortician? Because all of these are mentioned here, and I don't know the difference, so tell me.
They're basically all the same. The older terms, Sam, were undertaking and mortician, and then the profession kind of refined the name of what to call the person as years went on, and it became funeral director. So that's the modern name, but basically the name is the same, and we all do pretty much the same work from state to state.
Wow. Now, you know, I'm really curious how people get into this line of work, because I can't imagine it would be so so pleasant to work with dead people. But so I'm really curious, how did you get into this, Stan?
Well, I'll give you a little brief history on that. I was raised on a dairy farm in New York State, in the southern tier of New York State, near Pennsylvania, with my brothers Gary and Ed and my sister Mary Jane. And we had a small cemetery near our farm, within the middle of our farm that we operated on farm. And so the kids were kind of playing around in the cemetery a lot when we were kids. And I had my grandfather's wife, Blanche, who was a Blanche Drake. Her brother, Farley Drake, was an undertaker in our little town of Jasper, New York, around the turn of the century. And I guess maybe it just skipped a generation and then caught up to me to become a funeral director or an undertaker. But a lot of people, Sam, are maybe born into the business because they had parents or had grandparents that had a funeral home or were undertakers, so it was natural for them to come up through the next generation and to become a funeral director themselves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just have no one in the business, Sam, but just decide they get that calling. I call it a calling because I think it is a calling to be in this business. Mm-hmm. And if you receive the calling to go do that work, then you just go ahead and go to school and get your license and become a director. So there's lots of different ways that people become involved in the funeral business. A lot of people, as I say, are brought up in the business and take it over from their mom and dad. And others are just called to do it and say, well, maybe this is what I'm called to do, so I'll go do it.
Yeah. Wow. Now, did you have to have any preparation to work with bodies? You know, I mean, you said you have to go to school and get certified or licensed?
Yep. Most states, Sam, around the country have a minimal amount of education you have to go to. Most of the states now, it's at least an associate's degree. Most people who become funeral directors go and get their bachelor's degree in funeral service, and there are a number of schools around the country that are mortuary schools that actually will teach people how to become funeral directors and funeral assistants, and they teach you the whole thing from embalming of a body to all the paperwork that's involved and how to meet with families. There's really quite a lot to it, and it's really not for everyone, but as you talk to different funeral directors around the country, they were brought into the business by different different means of being brought into the business, but there's always been that curiosity from most people out there about what funeral directors do.
Right.
You know?
Right, yeah, because it's not something that people really like to talk about, you know, it involves death and everything.
Right,
and,
right. But
yeah.
it is a very satisfying work, and I'll ask you and Jen both, do you know a funeral director in your area?
Now we do.
No,
we do.
So you've never met a funeral director in an organization such as Rotary or anything like that?
No, not at all. And I try to avoid going to funerals too, you know. So.
Well, I always tell people it's always nice to talk to a funeral director ahead of need, what we call pre-need.
Right.
Most people have questions about funerals. What's going to happen to me when I'm deceased? Do I want to be cremated? Do I want to be buried? And do I want to donate my body to science? And people in our business always tell people that, you know, it's a good idea to meet a funeral director. I always tell people, if you don't know a funeral director, just drive into a parking lot someday at a funeral home and knock on their door and say, hey, yeah, I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what they say, you know, that's another one of those things where people don't think about preparing, but everybody has to deal with that, you know, and I know sometimes there's advertising from cemeteries or funeral homes that advertise, you know, it's like you should plan in advance and all this stuff so other people don't have to do it for you.
Yeah, it's always good to have a plan for yourself. And if you're married and you have children, even if you're not married, it's nice to have a plan in place. You don't necessarily have to put money up ahead of time. Some people do. Put money in a trust to take care of their funeral. But a lot of people just have a plan in place, so if something happens to them, their family, they don't sit around in anguish when they do meet with a funeral director and say, boy, I didn't know what this person wanted or not wanted. So it makes it easier to talk about it ahead of time. And it is a difficult thing to talk about for most people.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I can understand. No, nobody wants to talk about that, you know.
And so you've never thought about your own demise, Sam?
No, I have. I just haven't made any arrangements, you know, but I think it's never too early to do that.
Yeah. What about you, Jen?
I don't think about that yet.
Yeah,
I'm
you
only
see, we
30.
Don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't think about these things.
I think my parents could probably take care of it if I were to go before them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
That's true.
Well, and we do live day to day, and you never know what's around the next corner. Hopefully everyone gets to lead a long and happy life, but that's not always the way things work for many of us, so it's always just good to have a plan.
That's true.
A lot of people actually go out and will purchase a burial lot in a cemetery ahead of time. And actually, I've known people over the years that have actually purchased their own monuments and put them up ahead of time.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this now. I mean, you have to deal with different customs of different religions too, right, when you do this?
Yes,
because I think like both Jen and I are Jewish, and I don't think Jews allow embalming, right? I mean, you have to bury...
Usually not.
Right.
Most people of the Jewish faith, it's what we call a direct burial, and it's usually done within 24 hours after death, if that's possible.
Right.
And I'm not sure. I've never done a lot of Jewish funerals because where I'm located and where I practice most of my life, it's been usually just the standard Catholic religion or Presbyterian or Methodist, and most of those people choose embalming, but not all.
Right.
Of course, cremation is very big now. Out where you folks live, California, about 60% of the population is cremated in California.
Oh, that's interesting. I would never
think
that.
New York State, the Northeast, we're a little bit less than that. We're at about 40% cremation in the Northeast part of the country, but those numbers are going up as well. People, years ago when I was a kid, back in the 1950s and the 60s, yeah, I'm pretty old, they had a funeral was a 3 or 4 or 5 day process. If you passed away on a Monday, the person was embalmed. You had a couple of days of calling hours and maybe a funeral on a third or a fourth or a fifth day. So it was a long process back then. But people are a little quicker now on things. We all lead, as you know, a busy lifestyle.
Right.
And it's difficult now for people to take time off of work and take 2 or 3 or 4 days to memorialize a person's life. So things have a tendency now in the funeral business to be a little shorter as far as calling hours and a service. And more people are just doing a memorial service after the person is either cremated or buried. And they may have a get-together at a restaurant or a lodge or a legion or a church maybe a week or two later. So and you, as you read obituaries, I'm sure we're out where you are, and I heard you say, Sam, you're still getting the newspapers, which is good.
Yes.
As you read newspapers, you'll see where people will have a memorial celebration after someone's death, and that's usually without the body actually being present. Sometimes it's a month or a week or two after the person's death. So.
Yeah.
Everybody has different ideas about what they want for themselves, but
that's true.
People in our trade always encourage people to make their wishes known to someone, even if they jot it down on paper and have it witnessed and give it to the loved one and say, you know, if something happens to me, this is really what I want for myself. And that's, I think that's important.
Yeah. Now, why do people choose cremation? I always wondered about that because, you know, obviously the more traditional way, although you're saying now about half of the people choose cremation, which is amazing. But let's say in Western society, it's not as traditional as burying someone in the cemetery, right? Or am I wrong?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. The traditional funeral was having the person embalmed, having them dressed, cosmetized, a nice casket, you know, with the clothes that they wanted to be buried in, and then calling hours and the funeral and then a burial. And then people started doing more cremation, and years ago the Catholic Church did not approve cremation, but that changed 25 or 30 years ago, and now the Catholic Church approves cremation. So more people are choosing cremation. It is a little less expensive. You know, the average funeral, traditional funeral now in the country might be from $7,200 to $10,000. You could spend more or less. And the average cremation price around the country is probably in the $2,000 to $3,000 category. So for some people, it's financial, Sam.
Right, right. And then you don't have to get a grave, right? Or do you?
Well, you don't have to. No, lots of people will just take the cremains and have them in an urn and keep them at home.
Right.
And most states allow you to keep the cremains at home or take them out and spread them. But some people will still bury the cremains in a cemetery lot.
Right.
Some people that choose direct cremation and don't have a lot to bury the cremains sometimes regret that because I'm kind of old-fashioned. I think you need a place to go to spend time with a person, even after they've passed on.
That's true.
And having a grave to go to, I think, is important. Even whether you've got a full body buried there or ashes buried there, at least you have a place to go visit.
Exactly. You know? It's like an address or something. You know.
Exactly. It's your next address, Sam.
Yeah. There you go.
a lot of famous people. As you go, you can go on the internet and look at what famous people have done. There's a place called findagrave.com. Have you ever seen that site?
No.
Oh, it's quite interesting. Findagrave.com. You can go on there and look up famous people's deaths and where they've been buried and the epitaphs they've put on their monuments. And it's quite entertaining. It's quite an entertaining site.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Stan Swan, and you wrote the book Undertakings of an Undertaker. Let's discuss the book for a few minutes. What can people expect when they read it?
A little bit of everything, Sam. There's 28 short stories in the book. You can get the paperback or electronic version, and there's some pretty humorous stories in the book. There's some serious stories in the book. I did some recovery work after 9/11 in New York City. And I also did some recovery work after Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Those stories are in the book. There's a lot of lighthearted things in the book. So it's a kind of a mix. it's not a depressing book at all to read. I think it's quite enlightening about what we do in funeral service.
Yeah,
I think most people would find it enlightening.
I think so. You know, I mean, I'm really enjoying the interview because, like I said, you know, it's not something you talk about regularly or that you think about or that you want to think about. Now, I also wanted to ask you, I mean, obviously bodies don't always come in one piece to you, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Now,
that's a difficult part of our business. So
that would be very difficult.
Funeral directors are trained to put back people as close as we can to what they originally looked like after accidents, fires, that sort of thing. And that's a real challenge for people in our business. But the funeral directors are trained to do those things. And that's one of the most difficult parts of our job is to try to present the person to the family the way they remembered them. Sometimes it's possible, sometimes it's not.
Right, right. Now, so do you guys also receive bodies from autopsies and stuff that are done by the authorities, and then they send them to you?
Yes. Yes. Okay. If a person is sent for autopsy to a medical examiner, the medical examiner would contact the family, and the family would make a decision on what funeral home or funeral service they want the remains released to. And then that funeral home would go to the medical examiners, sign the necessary papers to release the body, and then take the body back to the funeral home and meet with the family to decide what they'd like done with that person. Wow. If they were going to be embalmed or cremated, and then the funeral director would go ahead and do the work if the person wanted to see the person.
Cool. And how long did it take you to write the book, to put it together?
Actually, I started making notes in 1978.
Oh,
that
wow.
was a while ago.
So it's been in development for a while.
Yeah, I've started making notes on it years ago, Sam, and I actually didn't start writing it till about a couple 3 years ago. It's a short read. It's 115 pages, 28 short stories. It's a book you can slip in your back pocket or read electronically. I've had really, really nice comments about the book. It seems to be doing very well.
Very good. Congratulations.
It's a subject, as I say, most people. There have been other books printed similar to mine, and it's not an expose on funeral service. I mean, a lot of people think that people in funeral service are a little strange, and we're really not. We're regular people, and we just had the call to do the things that we're called to do. So if you could sit down and have coffee next to a funeral director in a restaurant, you'd probably never know that he was in funeral service.
Right,
so,
right.
But yeah. I encourage people to meet a funeral director. If you don't know one, just pull into a parking lot, knock on a guy's door someday and say, hey, I'd like to talk, and just sit and say hi.
Yeah, I know, and I think we get a lot of stereotypes from the movies and stuff about people that work with the dead. And yeah, so that's why I think we look at people like they're strange, like why would you want to work with dead people, you know?
Most people have what you said is very true. The old stereotype from watching all the old movies on television and people coming out of caskets and caskets coming out of the ground and poltergeists and all those things, you know. The business has gotten kind of a bad rap over the last 5 or 6 decades. But as people meet funeral directors, I think they realize, hey, we're normal people.
Right. Right. And thank goodness for people like you. You know, it's just like with first responders and, you know, or people that like are in the medical field. Thank goodness to you guys, because not just anybody could do that kind of work.
And somebody needs to.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody has to.
Yeah, there are people out there every day. Firefighters, police, first responders, ambulance corps, pathologists, coroners, all those people have a calling for what they do, and that's what makes our country good.
Yeah, absolutely. Somebody has to do it, and I know I couldn't scrape off a body from the asphalt or something, you know. It would be too much. So everybody go out, get the book, Stanley Swan. The book is Undertakings of an Undertaker, and you can learn a little bit about the funeral business and what Stan does and some funny stories as well. So I'm eager to hear about that. And much success to you, Stan. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
I want to wish you and Jen a peaceful holiday and all the best to you and your families. And really thank you. I appreciate you spending some time with me and letting me be on with you folks today out there.
Awesome. And you're a lot of fun and you're very kind. And thank you so much. And much success. Do you have any other books in the plans there?
No, I said after writing this one, I'd probably quit. It's been a lot of work, very, very rewarding, but I don't know that I'd tackle another one.
Yeah, there you go.
But Sam and Jen, thanks so much for having me today.
Thank Absolutely. You, and happy holidays to you as well.
Thank you. Take care, folks.
Okay, bye, Stan.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Now, this is interesting.
You know,
definitely interesting stuff, because I don't think about it much. I don't read about it. And
no, it's good learning about things, you know, like that, because you make an assumption as to what you know based on stereotypes and things like that. And
right,
to know, to meet the man, that's why he said, like, you should go and actually meet funeral directors, because it changes your perspective, probably.
Yeah, definitely. So it sounds pretty fun, that book, you know. We'll have to figure it out. I'm like so queasy about these things, you know. I mean, I couldn't be with a dead body in the same room.
I don't think I could either.
Yeah, we're softies. Yeah. So let's see what else is going on in the world. So we talked about Iran, and you know what? I'm not that interested in talking about it anymore. It's we'll wait and see. It's a very serious thing, though, and. When you're threatened by something like this, and, you know.
I mean, there's a lot of serious stuff going on in the world right now.
There really
is. I mean, everything
really
going on in Kenya, it's just.
Yeah.
It's getting out of hand all over the world.
All over the world, you know. And I'm reading another ISIS book, and I can't believe the things that they're doing. You know, it's just like unbelievable. It's like hell on earth.
I mean, everybody wants to be the worst. So
yeah.
It's like when you're goal in life is to be worse than the worst group, then that's a real problem.
Yeah. But you know what the main concern is the attraction they have for young people. You know, I mean, obviously it's mostly, if not all, Muslims, but many of them come from here. And it's interesting, because I'm reading in the book, he's talking about Minneapolis, St. Paul, how there's a big Somali community there. And apparently what happens is many of these teenagers do not assimilate. And so it's like a breeding ground for terrorists. And they're saying that there have been several people from that area going to fight for ISIS. And, you know, of course, we've heard from Europe, people do that and everything. And you have to realize, you know, I mean, a lot of people are disturbed. They're looking for some excitement, for some adventure, for some meaning and purpose.
Travel or get a job you like. I don't think that becoming, like, you might be an outsider because you're not American and you're living in Minneapolis. But to then become a cold-blooded killer is so unfathomable to me, like, just that's the option.
Yeah, but you know, that's the thing, is that, you know, they have to believe in something, and somehow I guess it's easier for them to feel that, you know, yeah, I'll go and fight alongside my brothers and sisters type of thing. But it's worrisome, because you get people like this from all over the world going there, and then he's saying when they come back, they're not going to be any less radicalized than they were when they left.
Right.
You know, so they're going to bring it home. And they are.
Well, isn't that the point, that they go there, train, come back so they can do it here?
I don't know if that's the point. I mean, it definitely makes sense. But I think many of them just go there to fight, you know, to be part of the fighting. I think they romanticize it somehow, you know. So
do they come back, though? I thought the point of going there was to be with them.
Yeah, but then maybe, and that gets to your point, that maybe they come back.
Oh, no, I only said that because you said to come back. That they come back.
No, 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 no. But you said maybe they're going in order. The point is they're going there in order to import it to here. What I'm saying is that they go there to fight, but eventually they're going to come back here and bring it here. Yeah. So I agree with you. You know.
Oh, I was actually. I don't have a stance on it.
Okay.
I was actually trying to understand what you were saying.
Okay.
I will not take credit for that one.
Okay. But, yeah, so, you know, you're getting radical Islamist among you, and it's very difficult, you know. And so, and that's just the Somali community. So think about, you know, all the unhappy people that would just bring it here, you know. And we've had that. We've had that in Oklahoma. We had that in Fort Bragg, was it, where the guy shot, he yelled Allah Akbar, and he shot a few soldiers. And so all this is connected, you know, somehow.
Of course. I mean, yeah. I don't think, you know, problems happening elsewhere are not
that's,
be ignored. They're, like, it's the world's problem, and I think we as human beings have to address these things.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, and they declared us as their enemy. I mean, we can bury our head in the sand, but it's not going to change the reality that they want to destroy us, you know. So it's not just the Middle East. They have a special place for America.
But they're also, they're killing, like, the in Kenya, they're killing people that are not Muslim.
Right.
So that's everybody else.
Right.
And that's not just Americans. That's just anybody that's not Muslim. I mean, there are Muslims in the United States. How would they discern between the two? And what if somebody's half Muslim, half something else?
Right.
Because that happens too. I mean, we're a culture that blends, so.
Right. But, I mean, they even kill their own Muslims because the Shiites and the Sunni Muslims, and that's essentially what this is about. They're fighting each other there, and, you know, and you get Christians and Kurds getting caught in the middle, but essentially this is between Shiites and Sunnis. So they don't care that there are other Muslims. They just want people to be like them, you know, and everybody that's not like them is going to be destroyed.
I mean, so, I would love to see a world where everyone does their own thing and lives in their own, like, group. Like, you can also not have to identify with anything. Like, I mean, every Jewish person is different, and, like, not that we're better, but I'm just saying, like, we, like, I'm celebrating Passover, you're not. I don't care that you're not. That's not my problem.
Right.
But, like, if we all just did our own, I mean, that's a lovely picture that I'm painting of some kind.
No,
of.
No, you are. It's a utopian world, and I think just about everybody would love it to be like that, but you have the enemies of humanity, you know. You're always going to have that bad side, you know. And it's pretty scary stuff, man. The stuff that they do.
Like, and then what would it look like if everyone was like them? What's the point of that? And then what? And then they win that war, and then everyone's like them, and let's say everyone's Muslim, and then what?
Well, then they get to live the way they want. That's what
can't
it's
they
about,
anyway? Can't know? They on their land live the way they want?
Apparently not. If not, everybody's like them. You know.
Well, what I is mean, the way they want to live?
Obviously in control of everybody else, in oppression, you know. It's like Sharia law, and who's going to be in charge of the law? They are, you know. So, I mean, why do people want power in the first place? Even legitimate, you know. I mean, people run for government offices all around the world and stuff. Why would you want that, you know? Because people are hungry for power.
I mean, I guess, but then if everybody's Muslim, let's say all the Muslims though want power themselves, then who's in charge?
Well, they're leaders. That's what I'm saying. Just like in Iran, for example, you have the mullahs and the ayatollahs and stuff, and they control all their people, you know, and they control them according to their way of living. And obviously, it all comes from fear, you know. It's like, how can they live nicer than we are? You know, maybe there's something wrong with us. Maybe they're threatening our lifestyle. So it all comes from fear. I mean, people that are not afraid, people that are happy with themselves, do not go around killing people and doing this stuff.
Right.
So they're extremely miserable people.
Or comparing yourself to anybody else.
Yeah.
Because who cares what they're doing?
Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, some religions actually move you to action and convince you that everybody else has to be converted or killed.
I mean, it's been a lot of years of it not being that way.
Yeah.
And we've done okay as a world.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you go tell them that, you know.
I don't want to talk to them.
I know. Don't even be in that side of the world, man.
No.
You know, you don't come out. You know, and there's worse things than death, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there can be a lot of suffering and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they were like, I was reading this chapter. It's hard to talk about, but about these women and young girls that are being given to the fighters, you know, as their wives or whatever, as mm-hmm. gifts to them. And they get raped and, you know, and gang raped and stuff. And they ask their captors to kill them.
Yeah.
And they won't.
Right.
Because they need them.
Right. Yeah, that is. It's like it's so surreal. I can't believe that is happening in this day and age.
It's happening.
That sounds like caveman times.
Yeah, back in the Stone Age,
right?
You know, and so like this is related here, and I wanted to bring this up about the child sex trade in Asia, and now they're bringing it up in Cambodia. And you hear those horror stories, and this is the same, but this is like willing people. I mean, parents are selling their girls, and boys too, to men that are like middle age and stuff, you know. And I mean, you're talking about like girls as young as 12 years old. Now, when a girl is exposed to this, what kind of a life do you think she's going to have? Mm-hmm. You know, always a victim, you know, always abused. I mean, this is like trauma. It's not just like abuse, molestation, some psychological problems. I mean, this is trauma. I mean, these women will never be the same.
Right.
You know, so you're destroying a soul, you're destroying a spirit, and just to sell them for like $1,000 or something, you know.
It's so crazy that this happens at all, that the people can be so cruel and do the things they do. And I understand where some people would be like, well, there obviously is no one watching out for us. You know, like there's no higher power. How could that be if this is all going on? And I get where people like can go into that dark place. However, then there's all the other things that go on in the world that are so great.
Right.
And being like a journalist and like having that background, I like would love to like when I die, I want to like ask the higher power that I believe in, like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Why?
Maybe we'll get answers.
Just tell me why.
Well, I have a lot of answers to that because I studied the Kabbalah. So, I mean, I'm not saying these are like the true answers. I can tell you what my answers would be to a lot of these things. But the reason why, let me explain to you in two sentences, in two paragraphs or so. The way I view the universe is everything has the flip side to it. Everything has an opposite. You have male, female. You have light, you have dark, you know. So everything's got like two sides to the coin. And in order for you to define goodness, you have to have badness too. You have to have evil so you can measure it against something. That's right. One thing. But also it's because you have positive, you have negative. You know, it's like everything's got two sides.
Yeah. So, which is why, by the way, that you and Candace Silvers did not see eye to eye.
Yeah.
Huh? Because her belief is the complete opposite.
Right.
Is that there's no judgment on anything.
Right.
And then you wouldn't have good or bad. You'd just have what is.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But so she's saying that evil is not bad? Is that what you would be saying?
She's not saying that there is.
It's not good or bad.
You wouldn't label it.
Right.
You wouldn't even probably say something is evil.
Right.
Because that's already a term that it describes it.
Right.
So you'd probably.
Wow, you really understood more than I did.
Well, because I've also read The Power of Now. Right. My dad is very into all this. So, like, I think there's competing thoughts. And at the end of the day, leave everybody alone.
Yeah, exactly. Live and let live. That's the message.
Right.
Yeah, I know. And don't go selling your little girls to for $1,000, $1,500, or for any amount at all. I mean, you bring children to the world. I don't care what kind of culture you're in. You don't do that. You know it's going to hurt your kids. So.
But obviously these are.
They're very desperate people. They must be.
They just are not logical, as we would say. Like these are not thoughts that probably make sense to them.
Right. You know, I mean, like, whereas in our society, you take a bullet for your kid.
Not everyone.
In front of a train.
Then there's no. Casey Anthony. Then there's people that kill their kids in bathtubs. Then there's kids.
But those are unusual, let's say. But
right.
It's not a way of culture.
But however, not everybody's fit to be a parent.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and in some cultures, you're just unfortunate to be born into them. You know, it's not more than you can say about it.
Yeah, there's just crazy people everywhere.
Yeah.
So
I know.
Not everybody sees having children the same way, or, you know, so I don't know. I just don't know.
Yeah.
People are weird.
I know. Yeah, and then finally, I just want to bring this up because this is pretty funny. I guess a 17-year-old kid got a rejection letter from Duke University that he wasn't accepted. So he wrote a rejection letter to their rejection letter.
That's funny.
And he said, I don't accept your rejection letter, so thus I'm going to attend next year.
And what did they say?
I don't know. There's not anything that they said about it. It just probably went viral or something, you know.
Well, how did it get leaked, I wonder?
Oh, I think he probably put it on Facebook or something, you know. I'm sure he put it all over the world.
It's pretty
funny.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, he says...
Good for him.
Yeah, thank you for your rejection letter. After careful consideration, I regret to inform you that I'm unable to accept your refusal to offer me admission.
Hey, he's smart, and he's proving something.
Yeah. I mean, he says, this year I've been fortunate enough to receive rejection letters from the best and the brightest university in the country. Yeah. That's pretty good. It's original.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Maybe he'll stand out and they'll take him after.
Probably.
Yeah.
Or maybe he can go to Stanford because it's free.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, tomorrow's the weekend. Happy Easter. I mean, do they say Happy Easter? Because it doesn't mark a happy time.
You do say Happy Easter.
Right. Happy Easter, Happy Passover, whatever. And everybody rejoice. Don't sell your kids. Don't kill other people. Don't enslave people.
Be nice.
Actually, Passover is about deliverance from slavery. So think about that today.
Just be nice to people, guys.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. Jen, enjoy yourself.
Thank you, you too.
Thank you, and we'll see you on Monday.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.